Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Wrap-Up Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and with me today is Lita. How are you doing, Lita?
I'm doing great. You always say with me today like you're being joined by a special surprise guest or like you have some rotating co-hosts.
It's part of my thing.
Have I ever missed a podcast? I don't think I have.
I don't think so. It's just that's why it's funny.
Okay. Just making sure that no one gets too excited that like, ooh, with him today. Oh, it's Lita again.
Well, I think I actually started saying with me today on the Ninja Warrior podcast as a joke, but then I actually started genuinely using it for the other podcasts.
Yeah. Well, this show, I would say, is the most influential show on RTP, so that makes sense.
Clearly. We are here to talk about the first two episodes of the playoffs in Ninja versus Ninja. And I think this might be a quick, this for me, from my perspective, this is going to be a fast podcast because I did not have much to write down during these episodes. And I'm going to get into why later, but I don't know what you thought, Lita.
Yeah, it was a little easy to tune out, especially the first episode, because apart from the Beasts from the East, I didn't really care about the first three teams, the three other teams. And then they had all of my favorite teams in the second episode, which I'm like, can you just spread it out a little bit? This is very annoying. Should we talk about the fact that Matt and Akbar are starting a podcast?
They're starting the American Ninja Warrior Terran show. They're taking all of my things.
Is it called the American Ninja Warrior Terran show? That would be amazing.
No, I think it's just the American Ninja Warrior podcast or something.
Are they just like they're interviewing athletes?
Yeah, I think like they're interviewing athletes about their lives outside of the show. And like it's I think legitimately just like very, very similar in concept. I should have gotten more Ninja Warriors on my show first.
You've never had a Ninja Warrior on your show.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I've been waiting.
It was like it's like an era that I was going to start contacting Ninja Warrior people.
Well, I guess because we do interviews on this show with them.
Well, exactly. But like these are more show oriented.
Yeah. Well, to be the best, we have to compete against the best podcasts,
Yeah.
So we already compete with the Wolfpack, so why not compete with the hosts of the show as well?
No, I mean, I honestly think it's like potentially a really good thing. You know, if it's a successful podcast, then it gets more American Ninja Warrior fans into podcasts, and we are one of like four American Ninja Warrior podcasts, so I feel like we can only stand to benefit from that. It's not like we're going to lose any of our audience.
You don't know. Maybe there are people who wake up every week and they're like, all right, I've got time to listen to one American Ninja Warrior podcast this week. What's it going to be?
They're obviously going to go with Matt and Akbar, but they don't do the same thing. They don't do the same thing as us. So I feel like we're all right.
Okay.
I feel like we're good.
All right. But things aren't icy between you and your best friend, Matt, for stealing both of your podcasts and combining them into one.
No, imitation is the purest form of flattery.
Yes, I have heard that. So you guys are still best friends?
Still best friends.
Okay. Maybe you can go on his show and be his co-host, and Akbar and I can do this podcast. I think that would be better for everyone.
I agree. Only Akbar should also join our podcast, and you can just take this one.
Okay. So wait, so it's just Akbar now? We're both getting kicked off of this podcast? He just takes it?
No. Matt, Akbar, and I will do the American Ninja Warrior podcast.
And then you and Matt and Akbar will also do the Matt and Akbar podcast?
Here.
Listen, Akbar is a full-blown celebrity now that he's participated in the celebrity special, so I can't compete with that.
We will talk about the celebrity special and the All-Star special as soon as I watch them.
It's only three total hours of Ninja Warrior.
Oh, man. I'm excited for Ninja Warrior proper to start, but I'm not excited for the two-hour runtime.
It starts tomorrow.
Okay. I don't know what that has to do with two-hour runtime.
I'm just like, I'm not ready. There's been like 17 hours of American Ninja Warrior in the last 2 weeks.
I know. But first, we are here to talk about Ninja versus Ninja. And we have two new obstacles, the parallel pipes and the hanging staircase. The parallel pipes, you swing over on a ring, and then there are two parallel pipes one is higher than the other. You have to just kind of work your way down them. And both athletes are going to use the same pipes to go down, so there might be contact there. And then on the hanging staircase, you just it's just one of those. You climb up the little ledges, and then there's a monkey bars thing in the middle.
Yeah, it's like the devil steps, but with monkey bars in between.
Yeah, and then theoretically, you might be like having contact on the monkey bar or any of them, but it's just never, ever going to work out that way.
The contact happened on the parallel pipe slot.
Yes. And we'll talk about that. So then you go back down, and then that's the end of that obstacle. And I will say right off the bat, I hated these obstacles.
Why?
I thought at the very least, I hated the hanging staircase and where it was positioned, and the combination of the parallel pipes with the hanging staircase. I felt like there was not a single qualifying race where I felt any tension past the parallel pipes.
Okay. Oh, because like it's impossible to have a lead change.
Every single race was decided by the parallel pipes, and that was it.
Okay, got it. Because I liked the parallel pipes a lot as an obstacle, but I agree with you that if it was something that was followed up by something that could also have a lead change, because the parallel pipes had tons of opportunity for people to pass each other and for that contact that we sometimes like to see. But you're right. I can see now why these stairs were your enemy.
Yeah, well, and like the cool thing about the parallel pipes was that there's a lot of contact, that there's a lot of opportunity for like somebody can get there first, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get off first, and there's a lot of different ways that you can attempt the obstacle. But the way that it worked is that usually the person that gets off the parallel pipes is going to have a significant lead over the person that gets stuck on the parallel pipes. And that combined with the fact that the hanging staircase does not give any opportunity for you to pass the person, essentially once somebody is on the hanging staircase, they have won unless they miss the wall.
Yeah.
That's I think what happened with every single race we saw on both episodes.
Yeah. The other thing about the parallel pipes is that like it clearly was much more effective to go under than it was to go over. But that I wouldn't have known that unless I saw people do it a couple times both ways. Like, I think that it's easy for them to look at it and be like, yeah, I'll just go right over it. But that makes it too hard to dismount without falling backwards. But people didn't know that. So a lot of the time it just kind of felt like luck, like whichever one they chose, whether to go under or over.
Well, I think it's just tempting to go over because that seems like the safer option, because you can just get your legs around that bottom pipe and then just be like, oh, this seems fine. But then especially if there's somebody else swinging the pipes, then you really end up getting screwed. But I think that the athletes knew eventually that going under was clearly the fastest route, but you still saw a lot of them try to go over. And I think it's just like in the moment, their instinct is like, oh, over, that's the safer. And then they're like, oh no, I messed up.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good part of that obstacle. Just again, in combination with the hanging staircase, like all of my notes are, this person takes the lead on the pipes and then they win. This person takes the lead on the pipes and then they win.
And that's our podcast.
There you go. So it also didn't help that the teams I was rooting for here were the NorCal Ninjas and the Beasts from the East. This episode was just one disappointment after another.
Right.
To start off the episode, we had the Golden Hearts versus the NorCal Ninjas. Neil Craver was going up against Brian Kretsch, and Craver pulls ahead at the pipes and Brian can't catch up. That was legitimately the first bit of notes I wasn't even sarcastic at this point.
Yeah. So I got excited at the beginning of this episode because I thought that they were going to do because they did like a group package for the Golden Hearts. They were the first ones. And they were like, we're all like best friends. We love each other. We're so similar because we're all such weirdos. And I was like, this is great. They're just going to do a package for like the team as a whole. And then we won't have to do individual ones. But then we also still did some individual ones.
I had the exact same thought. And they repeated this formula where they went over the team and then didn't give the first racers any packages,
right,
but then proceeded to just like kind of randomly give people packages along the way. And I think this might be true for both episodes. I think the women got packages every single time this time. Like, it's almost like they were trying to make up.
That's because this is the first time that we haven't had a women's race get montaged.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I feel like they were like, okay, we're finally going to actually pay attention to the women.
But we had zero montages. So it's not like they get credit but also
something I sort of realized was that the few times that there were lead changes, it was during the women's rounds. Because when there are women competing, there's a much higher likelihood that they might not be able to get up the wall in their first attempt, which means there's a lot more opportunity for lead changes, which made the women's heats a lot more exciting than the men's, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also we're finally getting actual races between the women instead of just like falling on the floating tiles literally every time.
Yes, and obviously the one like really shining moment of these two episodes involves some women, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. So Neil Craver is going to take this round over the NorCal Ninjas here. Next up is going to be Anna Shoemaker versus Natalie Duran. Anna is a gymnast who did well in previous team competition, and Natalie is a crazy YouTuber that's done all of these crazy things, like getting a pilot's license and a motorcycle's license and all kinds of licenses.
Yeah, when I think of like someone who's really fun, I think of someone who has like a lot of certifications and licenses. Like just someone who has permits to do a lot of stuff.
And like crashing the Emmys is okay. That actually, that's kind of like a crazy thing to do. You might say, but they've been talking about it for years now. Like that is like the one thing.
Yeah.
That they can
she
talk
also
about.
Says that she has a ton of followers on YouTube, but I thought that they were called subscribers. Did they it are. Change?
I don't think it's changed, okay. But
I don't know. We've well established that I am not a YouTube person.
I mean, I'm probably just as likely to mess that up as
it just seems like if it's your career.
I mean, I guess so. So Anna's going to pull ahead at the parallel pipes. Natalie's going to get really hung up there, and Natalie will catch up a little bit by the hanging staircase, but Anna will still be ahead. Unfortunately, though, Anna had gotten her shoes wet earlier in the course, and so she is going to fail her first attempt on the wall, which will allow Natalie to catch up and take the win from Anna. As I said, one of the few opportunities there for a lead change after those parallel pipes.
Yeah, but it's also not even like exciting to watch someone lose because they missed the warp wall. Like, that's not fun.
It's not. It's really not. But it's more exciting than just being like, okay, parallel pipes are done. This heat is over.
One, yeah.
Natalie is going to take that point, and the NorCal Ninjas are down 2-0. Next up is going to be Grant McCartney versus David Campbell. Grant is going to talk about how he trains in Hawaii, and it's a great natural training ground. He trains in craters, he surfs, and he skateboards.
I still think that Grant McCartney should host a children's show. I still feel like every time he's speaking, it sounds like he's speaking to a child. And like, especially in this package, he's like, here's how surfing relates to American Ninja Warrior. Here's how skateboarding relates to American Ninja Warrior. It's just like an activity where he's just like explaining how all of these things are ninja activities.
I also thought this was a perfect fit for Natalie. Like it just like matched Natalie's package, where it was like craters, that is something kind of unique to Hawaii that makes sense. It's a natural thing. And then surfing and skateboarding, which you can definitely only do in Hawaii. Like,
yeah, there's only skateboarding in Hawaii. That's why when you play like Tony Hawk games or whatever, you're always in that tropical paradise of Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. then David Campbell is going to get a package about how he's been doing this for 10 years. And when is he going to get another package?
I like that he said that he treats every run like it's his first, not every run like it's his last. I feel like that's a better attitude, where you're like, instead of like doing every run like it is sad, it's like an ending, or it could be an ending, like treat every run like you're trying to make a really great first impression. It's a good lesson for life, everybody.
Yes. So David and Grant are going to go at it. They are very close on the pipes, but Grant is going to have a slightly better dismount there to give himself a lead. And just David is not going to have an opportunity to catch up after that.
Yeah. The other problem with the hanging stairs is that if you have a wingspan like Grant's, it's just like not even fair. Like, you can reach across so many steps.
I mean, I think that's fair in a spot where, you know, David has the opportunity to, through his great climbing ability or something, like, we'll eventually watch Dan Yeager take on the hanging steps, and he was just like blazing fast through those things.
Yeah, and me too, I guess.
And like, if there were two separate sets of them, even like, screw the contact didn't matter at any point. There would have been opportunity for somebody to, just through skill and speed, be able to, overtake somebody else. But, and this is when I first know, like, these hanging staircases, they seem a bit lame to me. I'm not sold on these.
I also call shenanigans. I think that Grant McCartney kicked the pipe away from David Campbell on purpose. He says that he didn't. I think he did it on purpose. So there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's playing the game. I just think that he is lying when he says it was an accident.
I see. I don't think he did it on purpose. When we watched the replay, it didn't seem like it was on purpose.
There's malice in Grant's eyes. And I don't trust him. Yes, I see behind the smile and the facade. And I think that he has a wicked side.
There you go. So the NorCal Ninjas get swept here.
We've already established Grant as someone who's never going to come on our podcast because of many things that I've said about him. So I feel like, why not go all in?
I feel like there is a point that we can just start talking about who is willing to come on our podcast based on what you've said.
Rude.
So the NorCal Ninjas are swept. They are out of the competition. Golden Hearts will be moving on to the final round in the episode. Next up is going to be Team Iron Grip versus the Beasts from the East. And I just, like, I already knew. I had a feeling. I was just like, NorCal Ninjas just lost. I bet the Beasts are also going to lose, and I'm going to be very sad. You know.
Prophetic.
We'll
see. Yeah.
First up was Dave Kavanaugh versus Matisse Awati, the Kid, they call him. And I will refer to him as the Kid because that's what they do.
I think that Akbar should make more jokes about his name being pronounced like Matisse, like the painter.
Okay.
I just think there's a lot of potential. He's an artist with his climbing. I don't know.
That was a master stroke by the Kid.
There you go. Something about, I don't know, what did Matisse paint, like ballerinas?
I don't know. I just started watching Genius Season 2, Pablo Picasso.
Wait, not the Genius Season 2?
No, not the Genius, Genius.
Okay, you can't, like, get me all excited that you're watching Genius Season 2.
No, it's a show from National Geographic called Genius. The first season was about Einstein. The second season is about Pablo Picasso. And I will say, not as interested in Picasso as I was about Einstein.
I wonder if they'll do a woman.
We can be geniuses. Because both Einstein and Picasso were apparently, like, ridiculous womanizers. So
yeah, that makes sense to me.
One of the first reviews on the site that I use about the first season of Genius is like, if their goal was to make us hate Einstein, then, like, great job.
Yeah. Was it, do you think?
I mean he was a bit of a jerk throughout the whole season, which was his whole life, so, you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. All right, so Pablo Picasso, not interesting. Einstein, bad dude. That's what we're learning.
Basically. Dave is going to take the lead on the pipes, which is going to force the Kid to try and catch up, but he is not going to be able to. He will eventually go down at the staircase trying to skip some of those steps, and Dave will take this win. Even now, Matt is saying, like, haven't seen many lead changes there on the steps. And I was like, yes, hopefully they'll change it for the next episode.
Good for the Kid for trying, though. He's the only one who, like, at least, like, tries to skip a bunch of steps knowing it's his only chance.
Yeah. But even if he had, like, it would have made a difference.
Yeah.
Because, like, just, like, the dismounting, like, you'd have to be, like, insanely fast to get up that wall, and you'd have to be right behind them. I think it's theoretically possible, just the odds of us seeing it aren't particularly likely.
Yeah.
So next up we have Tiana Weberly, Sweet Tea, versus Erica Cook. Sweet Tea has been doing some waitressing and some stunt work.
Oh, half of those things are relatable to me. I would not ever sword fight.
Fight anybody. I thought you were going to say Sweet Tea, but
no, I would never sword fight. That's, like, one of the things that she does, and I'm like, that's an activity that I have no interest in. Thank you.
Even with fake swords?
That just sounds boring and stupid. Why would I do that?
I'm pretty sure that's most Most movies, I'm pretty sure they're not using like real swords.
Okay, well, I'm not a movie star, so why would I ever find myself in a position to sword fight with fake swords?
Why would you ever find yourself in a position to fight with real swords?
For like the adventure, I don't know, this seems like an adrenaline thing.
I mean, I feel like you're much more likely to be in a position to fight with fake swords than real ones.
Okay, well, that sounds boring. I've seen a sword swallower in real life. Have you ever seen that? It's not really gross. It's just more...
It's pretty gross.
I mean, it's not like he pulls out the sword and it's like covered in guts. It's not like he speared his liver. Like,
I don't know. It's just like, that's like, he's just putting a foreign object into his throat.
Yeah, but he probably has a relationship with that sword. He probably knows that it's clean.
Sure, just like do that in the privacy of your own, you know, makeout room or something.
What? It's not a sexual thing.
She said, like, he's got a relationship with it. Just like, get a room.
Say he's in a relationship with it. It was interesting. I didn't understand how it worked. I think if he did it in his own home, then he would probably not make very much money.
I mean, I guess so. I'm not one of the people that's going to pay him.
Okay, well, I was. I tipped him because he was doing a trick.
Okay. I just think it's kind of a gross trick. Feel free to do it all you want. Like, I'm just not going to be
It was at the Museum of the Weird in Austin, and they had like sideshow performers.
Oh, you know who would have loved that?
Who?
Jackson Meyer, because he's weird.
Okay, wait, no, can we skip ahead so I can talk about this? Is there anything we really need to talk about with Tiana and whoever she goes against?
Jackson isn't even until the next episode.
Oh, okay. We can't skip the entire episode so I can talk about this? Okay, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
All right. So, Sweetie, and Erica is a power lifter and sprinter, just as interesting as sword swallowing and sword fighting.
No, Tiana doesn't swallow swords. I just want to make that clear. I mean, maybe she does. It's not referenced.
Yes. Well, Erica sped through the pipes, very, very, very quick through there. All we have to talk about is the pipes most of the time. You got to talk about how they accomplished the pipes.
I thought you
pipes.
Were trying to do like a, she was a track star, so she sped through the pipes. Because Akbar is like, they're going through it at track speed, which isn't the place.
She power sped through the pipes.
She power lifted her body.
Tiana falls way behind. However, Erica does not manage to get up the wall. Her knee, unfortunately, looking like it's the hindrance there, which allows Tiana to catch up and beat Erica in this matchup, and Tiana's going to take the point.
Yeah, but the fact that Erica even did the floating steps or the floating tiles, whatever, with her robot leg was really impressive.
Yes,
because it doesn't look like she can bend it.
It really doesn't. And like watching her, you could tell like there was a lot less power in the leg that was robotic, which usually isn't the case. Usually robots have more power, but maybe she just doesn't have enough battery power or something. So next up was Daniel Gill versus James McGrath. And Daniel is going to give us an infomercial on cryotherapy.
Have you ever heard of this?
I have.
Oh, end of sentence. Would you like to tell us more?
It's just like one of those weird things that rich people do.
Okay, so I have heard of this, but in the context of skincare, where people, like women, will do this to like freeze their, I don't know, maybe acne or something. I don't know what it is. I just know, have you ever seen Scream Queens? I bet you haven't. That doesn't seem like your show, but it's a Ryan Murphy show with Emma Roberts and Ariana Grande.
Yes, I saw the first season.
Oh, so everybody only saw the first season.
Well, I planned on watching more. I don't know if I tried and gave up or if I just haven't gotten it yet.
Season two, I watched the first episode and was like, I can't. But there's an episode of Scream Queens where they try to kill a character who they think is evil by like trapping her in one of these cryotherapy things. But then it turns out like, because she's a demon, like she survives it. And that's the only time that I ever seen cryotherapy, but I thought that it was fake.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know exactly how much science is in consensus about the effects of cryotherapy, but it's one of those things that like Joe Rogan will talk about cryotherapy.
He's a podcast. director.
Yeah, he has a podcast. He was one of the more successful podcasts.
There are very few people that when I hear the name, I'm like, oh, that person is famous for podcasting. It's right? like just him and Marc Maron, I think.
It's yeah. Well, like, you'd think like, oh, from Fear Factor, but no, it's the podcast.
I don't know. Was he on? Did he host Fear Factor?
He's the host of Fear Factor.
Oh, I didn't watch Fear Factor because, as listeners of the podcast probably already know, I am afraid of everything.
Sounds like it's a perfect show for you.
No, I have that factor. My whole life is Fear Factor. It's a huge factor in my life. I just remember seeing it on TV one time when like my parents were watching it or whatever, and it was one of the ones where they're in like a bathtub full of like scorpions or some kind of bug or something, and that scarred me for life.
Makes sense. Yeah. Maybe freezing them off would have helped.
Do you have to do Fear Factor? Do they know specifically what you're afraid of? And then they do that to you, or is it just random?
I would assume that they come up with things to do, and then for that episode, they choose people who they know will be particularly afraid of those things.
Because wouldn't applicants just lie? Like, I would say that my worst fear is, like, snakes or something, but I don't have an issue with snakes.
I guess so. I mean, that seems like when you write the book, how a normal gal got cast on Fear Factor, you can explain how lying about your fears is a huge step up.
I'll be like, I'm so scared of tofu. Don't make me eat it.
So after the infomercial about cryotherapy, James is going to have a package about how he's undefeated, which every single time they talk about this, you
unless
know
it's a woman.
Happen.
Unless it's a woman. That's the pattern.
That's true. I think it's probably like something like 80-20 in terms of if they mention you're undefeated, then there's 80% chance you're going to be defeated, and 20% chance that your record will continue. So they're going to take on the course. James is going to go high on the pipes. Daniel is going to go low. And that means Daniel wins.
Yes, since that is the only thing that matters.
Yep. This is when I wrote, this course is so boring. I was very annoyed.
Okay, well, luckily the first two are pretty short matchups. I mean, unluckily, because we like Beast from the East, but...
So we head to the relay. The women are going to go first. Dave is going to go against the kid, and it's going to be James versus Daniel for the final leg. Here are my notes for the relay. Erica falls way behind at the start, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we get our two favorite teams, Iron Grip and Golden Hearts.
Yes. this was the point in which I was just like, oh man, this course, we just lost the two teams that I was rooting for. Man, luckily the back half of the course is still the same, which continues to be compelling. So these final matchups are more compelling than the qualifying rounds, thankfully. So it's going to be the Golden Hearts versus Iron Grip. Iron Grip, we didn't talk about it at the start of this, but Iron Grip is a stacked team. The kid is definitely good at these races, even though he doesn't necessarily win all of them. Daniel Gill, obviously one of the top ninjas, and then to have Tiana as their female athlete, this is a very stacked team.
Yeah, the kid looks so much younger than 19 to me.
That's why he's called the kid.
Yeah, I guess. I thought it was because he's 19, which is a kid.
Well, there are plenty of young people that do this, but they're not all called the kid. This guy's called the kid because he looks like a 15-year-old skater boy.
Oh, okay. Got it. I think it's the haircut plus the hat that he's always wearing. Yes. The hat.
Yes, backwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Backwards hats are looks for children, just so everyone knows.
I'm pretty sure it was either Matt or Akbar at some point said, oh, he's wearing that backwards cap because he's so cool.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see how like men older than 40 would think that that is a cool look.
I had the thought when watching the kid, like, I wonder what he's going to look like in a couple of years, because surely it won't be the same as right now.
I mean, surely, I guess, but you would think that he's already kind of gone through puberty. So I don't know how much it's going to change in a couple of years, but we'll probably see. I bet he's going to be doing ninja for a while.
I would hope so. He seems to have a lot of promise here. So it's going to be the kid versus Grant McCartney. Grant is going to pull ahead of the pipes. But don't worry, that is no longer the deciding factor here. The kid is going to pull ahead after the warped wall, which, you know, obviously Grant is going to get to the warped wall first. But after the warped wall, the kid is going to pull ahead, going into the salmon ladder faster. It just looks like the kid has way more energy. Grant is just completely running out of steam here, but the kid just won't stop. He's going, 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 going. However, when he gets to the zigzag climb, he's going up, and then he goes down. He runs out of steam, or something happens to the kid, and all of a sudden Grant, who is like just struggling through the rumbling dice, has a second wind here. He's got another chance.
Yeah, and then he hangs upside down, which I understand to give his arms a rest, but why did he take his shirt off and where did it go? Is it in the water?
He hung upside down, he threw his shirt to the landing pad.
Oh.
And then he went back, he finished up, and then he, it seemed like hanging upside down, made all the blood rush to his head or something. He seemed very dizzy. He just seemed like completely out of it. He then wiped his hands on his shirt, and then I think he put it back on.
Maybe he was like, I'll look really hot when I'm like hanging upside down without my shirt on, but then I might be in some like weird positions on the zigzag climb. So I don't want everybody to be able to see everything.
This is a great photo op. Let me just take my shirt off.
I mean, yeah, I totally understand that. Like, I feel like sometimes, like if you're in yoga class or whatever, you're like, oh, I'm going to look really hot doing this in like a certain pose. And then you're like, oh, now I feel self-conscious. So like, I think that's probably what happened.
I was definitely thinking of using Jesse as the thumbnail for this podcast, but I feel like if I can find an upside down Grant McCartney, that should be it.
Or just take a regular photo of Grant McCartney and flip it upside down.
Give those instructions to Scott.
Yeah, you can do it.
This is the thumbnail. Just flip it upside down.
This is the thumbnail. I'm gonna send it to you upside down. Don't flip it right side up. Okay, it's supposed to be like that.
Grant looks just ridiculously exhausted. He is like, his head is down. I've never seen him look this like just like somber. He starts to go. I thought maybe he was like playing it up a little or something, but no, he was out of it, and ultimately goes down at the same spot in the zigzag as the kid. And the kid is going to take it because he got there first.
Yeah, it's like in Hercules when Zeus like sucks the life out of what's her name, Meg or whatever. This is a better reference if I could remember everybody's name. So you know what I'm talking about? At the end of the movie, Hercules like loses his strength. Never mind, it doesn't matter.
When he loses his god power.
Yes, that's what it is.
He's not golden anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's Grant, because he has the same hair as Hercules.
So the kid takes this point. Next up is going to be Natalie Duran versus Tiana Weberly. Tiana is going to take a big lead at the pipes, and Natalie's going to mess up. However, Tiana falls at the floating tiles, allowing Natalie to take the point there.
Yeah. And I just realized that I've been referring to them as the Golden Knights in my notes this whole time. That's not what they're called. Golden Knights is the hockey team. They're called the Golden Hearts. Have I been saying Golden Knights?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
The team is called the Golden Hearts.
Yes.
Okay. There is a hockey team called the Las Vegas Golden Knights that I am very into. And I don't know if I've been saying that the whole time instead of Golden Hearts this whole podcast.
I feel so embarrassed for you.
You know the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They're your favorite hockey team.
Obviously.
They are.
By the way, we played those Jackbox games on Twitch the other night, and we played them with Kirsten, and we played a trivia death game, and one of the ways to stay alive, I had to say, what sports team has the best fans? Mm-hmm. And I said, the Penguins.
Yes.
Because I was like, obviously, with Kirsten being the person who's judging this, she's going to be like, oh, Lita's a Penguins fan. They must have the best fans.
She also picked them to win the Stanley Cup this year.
She did not pick the Penguins.
What was the other? What did the other person say?
She might have picked the Cubs or something.
Oh, that might be true, but I mean, it's wrong. The Penguins are the best fans.
But I specifically did it to
appeal to Kirsten.
Put her in a position where if she didn't pick the Penguins, she was dissing you.
Okay, I will make sure to let her know that our friendship is over.
Perfect. luckily, the audience was participating, and I managed to survive through the audience votes.
Oh, well, that's not fair. I don't want to play these games with you if there's going to be a popular vote. You have so many more Twitter followers than any of us.
No, they, those people are against me in the chat. They're always rooting for someone else.
Okay, I think that clearly not if you got the votes.
Well, they didn't know it was me. It's anonymous.
Oh, okay. That's much better. Yeah. Oh, so they voted for you because they love the Penguins?
They just probably like penguins.
That's also fair. They are one of the least scary birds.
I think it was because they had to vote for the worst, and there were three options, and one of them was like a Canadian team.
That's true. They do suck at sports.
There you go.
I'm just kidding, Canadians. The Winnipeg Jets did great this year.
We're finding out how to talk about things in this podcast.
Yeah, we just don't really want to talk about the actual runs.
Next up is going to be Neil Craver versus Daniel Gill. They take on the floating tiles at the exact same time, but Gill gets to the ladders first, which means he gets to the salmon ladder first. No resting for them. Craver is going to get really tired there on the salmon ladder and the rolling dice, where Gill is going to go straight into that zigzag climb. He's very slow on the zigzag climb, even taking time to wipe his shoes.
That was so impressive, though, when he's hanging just by his arms to wipe his shoes in like tree pose,
right? Which gives Craver an opportunity to catch up, but Gill still manages to take the win.
Yeah, good for them.
Yes. So then we get a relay. The women are going to go first, and then it's going to be Grant versus the kid, and then Craver versus Gill. Tiana takes a big lead for the Iron Grip once again, and Grant goes for a crazy dismount on the hanging staircase and just gets soaked.
I feel like this should have counted as a fall.
Yeah, he's just like completely like almost entirely in the water there. They're way behind at this point. Craver was going crazy on the salmon ladder and the rumbling dice and manages to pull ahead of Gill. Then Gill goes crazy fast on the zigzag and wins for the Iron Grip.
So this was at least exciting.
When they have the back half of the course that has obstacles that are actually good, it works.
Well-deserved win spot in the final four for the Iron Grip team.
Yes, Team Iron Grip. You got to think they're one of the favorites going into the final four here.
Yeah, I think so. Also, wow, it just occurred to me that it's going 16-4. It's just like not how I'm used to sports being.
Well, then we have our next episode, which I thought was much better, even though the qualifying part was still pretty boring. Same obstacles, unfortunately. I really figured, like, once they did one round with these obstacles, surely they would change them. But they stuck with these parallel pipes and the hanging staircase.
And I feel like if they did them for these first two episodes, it's going to be the same obstacles for the next two.
I know. I hope not. I hope not. First up is going to be Team Frostbite versus the Le Breakfast Club. And right off the bat, I was like, oh my God, this is a packed episode.
I'm sorry. The way that you just said, oh my God, really caught me off guard. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That classic Jared catchphrase. Yes, it's going to be a very packed episode.
The Le Breakfast Club, Team Wolfpack, and Phoenix Force. I was like, oh man, this is going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's like, this is the episode where there's only one team that I don't care about, and then in the last episode there was only one team that I did care about. Mix it up. It's almost like the world doesn't revolve around me.
It's unfortunate.
I know.
The Le Breakfast Club hasn't lost a race yet. That's going to be pointed out right before Chris DeGangi loses a race.
That's your nemesis, so that's good.
Exactly. First up was Nick Hansen versus Chris DeGangi. Chris really messes up at the ropes and almost falls in, which allows Nick to take a big lead at the pipes, which means Nick wins. Still really hate this course, I wrote.
Oh, I thought you were going to say still really hate Chris DeGangi.
Well, I mean, sure.
Yeah, obviously. Would you say that he's your celebrity nemesis?
Sure.
I was just having this conversation because I have several celebrity nemesises. Nemesis? and I'm always interested in who people's are.
Something I'm noticing at the pipes is that there's a particular like timing issue where if you are behind by a certain amount, then you will fall very far behind because the first person to get to the first pipe and then swing over to the next pipe moves that first pipe over. So if you happen to be swinging over to grab that pipe at the wrong time, then you're going to miss the grab and you're going to fall even further behind. So it's almost better to be like 3 seconds behind instead of 2 seconds behind, because then you won't miss the grab, which is just, again, I just think that part of it is poorly designed, especially in combination with the later hanging staircase. But Nick Hansen is going to take this point.
Yeah. For my favorite team.
Yes. Next up was Janique Lavette versus Jesse LeBrec. And Janique is a personal trainer and Jesse is Jesse.
Yes, that is her chiron on the bottom of the screen. Yes. Says Jesse LeBrec, professional Jesse. And they say that she has not only never lost a race, she's never failed on an obstacle. But this time it doesn't curse her because she's a woman.
Yes. Well, because she's Jesse.
Oh, okay. Right. Professionally.
Yeah. Janique tries to go over on the pipes, ends up flipping around. Jesse takes the lead, which means Jesse wins.
Yeah. And Akbar says something that he has definitely said before, which is these women are too hot to melt and too cold to freeze, which makes no damn sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
They could be too hot to freeze and too cold to melt, but they can't be. Nothing is too hot to melt. That doesn't make any sense.
I thought you were going to say he called her the LeBrec house.
I'm sure he did that too. Honestly, I just tune it out now.
Well, next up was your good pal, Jackson Meyer versus John Alexis Jr. John has been skydiving.
Yeah. I feel like I have missed my window for skydiving. I used to really want to do it and always thought that I would do it if I was given the opportunity. But now I think I'm too old.
I always thought I was going to do it because basically what happened was I watched Point Break and then I really wanted to go skydiving.
What
and
is
then
Point the longer Break? Is it that was, a movie?
Point Break is a classic movie.
Okay.
With Patrick Swayze and
R.I.P.
What's his name? Neo from The Matrix.
Keanu Reeves.
And also Gary Busey.
You said that like, oh, also your favorite, Lita, Gary Busey.
As we all know,
my favorite actor. Favorite.
And there's they like to go skydiving in that movie, and it's very much like a like adrenaline kind of movie made by Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, she was married to James Cameron and then beat him for the Oscar.
First female director to win Best Director.
Yes, for The Hurt Locker, which is a movie that I've definitely seen. I haven't seen
also a movie about adrenaline.
Isn't it about war?
Yeah, and adrenaline in the war.
Okay. I mean, I guess war is kind of an adrenaline rush, probably. I've never been there.
Part of what the movie's about. So basically, I watched Point Break, and I was like, I'm definitely going to go skydiving at some point in my life, because I want to be a badass like them. And then the longer the gap between when I saw the movie and present day, the less I wanted to go skydiving.
Yeah, I just think that there was the point where like I would do anything, like I would go on any ride at an amusement park or like go like do sports that I don't do anymore. And then the older I got, the more that the risk reward calculation didn't seem in my favor for certain things. Like I don't ski anymore because it's too dangerous. And now I get on rides at amusement parks and sometimes like feel nauseous because I am not a child anymore. And I feel like skydiving, that window has just kind of passed.
Yeah.
Sad.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
There are going to be so many people that are older than us that are going to be very mad at this conversation.
No, I don't think that like that 22 is like too old to skydive. I think that I personally have started to go to amusement parks and notice that I'm like not enjoying the rides as much. I'm getting sick more. Like, it's just not like, I just feel too anxious about it. So it's just a me thing. I don't think that I'm not 22 anymore. Oh my God. That's so sad. My birthday was 4 days ago.
Oh man.
In case people don't know, and that just seems like I forgot how old I am. It's different now.
And guess who said happy birthday to Lita?
Everyone who was a friend in my life, but also Taryn.
There you go.
He did it. He gave me the most heartfelt message. Said happy birthday.
There's lots of pats happening
on his on back. Did you set several alarms that day? Because you knew that it was totally over if you didn't say it.
I have evidence that it was before many of the people in many of our group chats.
Yes, many of our group chats. So many. Yeah. Yeah, it was before some people.
There you go.
Good job.
I'm not one of those like midnight happy birthday people. That's not right.
Yeah,
that's
not really your birthday. Midnight is okay. I had someone text me happy birthday in 48 minutes at like 11:12. And I thought that was too much. I was like, mm-mm.
That's like, let me just get it out of the way.
Right.
Ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or it's just like, I just want to be the first, but it's like, but you're cheating. Like, what if cheaters. I texted you in like January and was like, happy birthday in 3 months? Like, no. I would say,
it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I would say happy, like, whatever fractional birthday it is.
Here's
happy Nightingale's birthday.
Here's how you get to be the first person to wish somebody happy birthday. You need to be the person that sends the message the soonest after they wake up.
The soonest after the birthday person wakes up?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because they'll see that before they check like the older texts.
That's how you win. And like, if they don't check their messages that way, then that doesn't matter. You are still the person that got there first.
Mm-hmm. But how do you know when the birthday person is going to wake up?
That's what makes it difficult.
You see, that I think makes sense too, because in order to be, to truly deserve to be the first, you have to like be their best friend and like know them. And then you would know when they wake up.
There you go.
Okay.
See, it's a good system.
Yeah. This is good advice for everybody listening.
You're welcome. Anyway, were we talking about anything?
No, you were like, this podcast is going to be really short. And I was like, absolutely not on my watch.
John Jackson
Alexis
Meyer.
Jr., yes. Okay, whatever. This matchup.
Jackson Meyer is from Portland. Portland is weird. So is Jackson.
Okay. Well, that's a confusing sentence because Jackson is also a city. But we're not talking about Jackson, Mississippi. Yes. Okay. The keep Portland weird thing. So I was in Portland last year and I noticed that this is like they're saying or whatever. But as I mentioned, I had been in Austin the year before at the Museum of the Weird, which they have because keep Austin weird is their tagline. So I was like, what is going on here? And apparently there's a ton of debate about it and there's not any definitive answer, but I am team Austin because I felt that Austin was significantly weirder than Portland when I was there. I felt like Portland was very self-consciously weird. Like it was like, we're like hipsters and like we have like all this weird stuff that is like curated and false. And I felt like Austin was very authentically weird. There was a bunch of bizarre things in Austin, like one bridge where all of these bats live, but it's just one bridge, and then you go and see the bat bridge and it's just a cloud of bats, and I don't understand why.
Oh man, I just googled it very quickly, and according to Wikipedia, the slogan was created with the intention of supporting local businesses and small business owners. It was based on the Keep Austin Weird organization and slogan in Austin, Texas, and was brought to Portland in 2003 by Music Millennium owner Terry Currier after he learned of the movement in Austin.
There you go. I told you, Team Austin. Austin is much weirder than Portland. Also, the things that Jackson cites as weird things in Portland are not all even weird. He says that they have a soapbox derby. Pittsburgh has one of those. And I'm not saying to keep Pittsburgh weird.
Yeah, and I mean, Austin is also unique being in Texas and not being a very, like, it's like a liberal city in Texas. Yeah. Like, that's weird in and of itself.
Yes, Austin is a very weird place within Texas. So I felt that Austin was very authentically and genuinely weird, and Portland felt very constructed.
There you go. And also, disc golf is not that weird.
No, but disc golf is kind of like the king of almost sports, I think. Like, if someone said to name something that is almost a sport, I would probably say disc golf.
It is like under ultimate frisbee.
Yes.
Like,
ultimate frisbee, like, is a sport, and golf is a sport. Disc golf is almost a sport.
Well, it's like on levels of like hipsterism, there's like ultimate frisbee, which is also kind of like, can also be construed as a bro thing. And then there's like disc golf, and then there's like, I don't know, badminton or something.
Is badminton a hipster sport?
I don't know.
Or is it
like
just...
it.
You're not a hipster.
No, but I just figured I didn't want to say it as if I was disparaging it, because I think it's a very fun thing.
I feel like I would put badminton in the same category as like croquet. I feel like it's like a rich person sport that no one actually plays.
I mean, I only played it when I was a poor kid, so.
So I guess I'm wrong.
Based on my evidence.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can set up a badminton set easily, I think. I guess in your backyard. I don't know. I've never really partook.
It's because it's funny. Like, there may be a version of the sport that is not just a very shoddily set up net with cheap little things.
But maybe. Well, yeah, because
that's genuinely what I think of. I don't even know if there's a more professional version.
I mean, there has to be, right? I guess I should know. I played a lot of racket sports.
Oh my god, they have whole courts.
Yeah. Like, it's like tennis.
Yeah, I just thought it was like a backyard thing.
Like cornhole. Except they also have like world championships of cornhole.
Well, there you go.
I learned about this recently, because apparently there was a day where ESPN became ESPN 8 The Ocho, as like a reference to Dodgeball when that movie was really popular. I don't remember who was telling me about this. But they played like a bunch of stuff that is like almost sports, like cornhole.
Yeah. You know it's been a good podcast when you have multiple tabs open from Googling things. We've got Cryotherapy, Point Break, Keep City Weird, and then badminton.
Yeah, eclectic. We always Google a lot of things on this podcast, because what are we going to do? Talk about the show that people downloaded this podcast to hear us talk about?
Nonsense.
That would be ridiculous.
Speaking of, though... John versus Jackson. John ends up taking Jackson's ring, which I thought was very interesting. So they're both like they're swinging on the swing ropes, and they're going to the parallel pipes, and then John just like he just goes diagonally over and takes the ring from Jackson's side, which I just thought was an awesome move, because like, so John goes, and then Jackson gets to the ring, and he's like, wait, what? And he has to like, there's a moment where he was confused and had to like switch over.
Yeah.
They said it, cerebral.
Yeah.
That's what they called John and Jackson.
Yeah. Well, cause the stats, instead of talking about like their like experience or their weight or whatever, they're like, hey, they both go to college.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart guys.
So this one's not even going to be close, because, of course, John beat the pipes first, and he's going to take the win there, which leads us to the relay, where the women are going to go first. Then it's going to be Nick versus John, and then Jackson versus Chris. Jesse and Janique finish at about the same time, which means it's going to be all about John and Nick here. And they actually kept it close on the pipes and the floating tiles, but John was slightly ahead, which gives Chris a slight lead going into the hanging staircase, which of course means that Chris is going to take this down, and the Le Breakfast Club is going to win the matchup.
Yes, they take their rightful place in the final round.
Yes. So then it's going to be Team Wolfpack versus Phoenix Force, and I was just like, no!
No!
Why are you doing this?
I know, it's so rude. I don't understand the seeding. Like, they came from the wild card round, so maybe they think, like, oh, we'll put them against, like, the best team, which is maybe Phoenix Force?
I guess so.
I don't know. though that will not turn out to be the case.
Yeah. So first up is going to be Michael Torres versus Ian Dory. Torres is undefeated heading into this matchup, but Ian was just on fire this whole episode. Ian takes the lead on those pipes, speeds through the staircase, takes the win. Not even close. Torres is going to lose for the first time there.
I also don't think that they should put teams that have the same color schemes next to each other, because these guys are wearing like the same black tank top with red writing on it.
Yeah, but we know all these people.
Okay, I'm just saying.
It's going to be hard to tell them apart.
I don't know. You never know. The casuals might not know who some of these people are. Whatever, I was confused. I don't wear my glasses when I watch this show sometimes.
All right, well, next up was Cassie Craig versus Jerry D'Aurelio. And Jerry takes a big lead on the pipes. Cassie's shoe falls off as she's struggling there. Jerry misses the wall, but Cassie falls on the staircase, and that's it for Cassie. Jerry's going to take this round.
Yeah, that was just kind of a mess all over the place from everyone involved. But Jerry's hair is so pretty. Did you notice that?
There you go. I did not. Oh. Then we had Najee Richardson versus Dan Yeager. Najee hasn't lost yet this season, but unfortunately just gets his feet wet on the ropes, and I wrote crap because that means Najee's lost and like it's over. He ends up falling into the water with the floating tiles, but it doesn't matter anyway because he wasn't first on the pipes, and that's it for Phoenix Force. They're done. Just
they
like
get
that.
Swept, which is so crazy because they're so good.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
It's unfortunate. Which leads us to the Le Breakfast Club versus the Wolf Pack. And oh boy, this is going to be a good one. It's the full course, luckily. And we've got two great teams facing off against each other. This should have been the finals of everything.
Yeah, we finally have competitive women from both team. I'm sorry, no tea, no shade to all of the women who competed before this, but it is so boring to just watch. Like, even the most talented women only get to do a couple obstacles because their competitor falls.
There you go. So first up was John versus Ian. Ian gets his feet wet on the ropes. John got his feet wet at the ropes. Ian takes the lead at the pipes. John starts to catch up at the wall, and they eventually get neck and neck at the rumbling dice. They head into the zigzag climb at the same time, but because John had gotten his feet wet, his shoes are slipping. And Ian is going to end up taking the win there. And John is going to take his first loss of the season. Lots of those happening.
I know, but if John Hustle is to someone, I'm fine with it being Ian.
Yes. And like I said, Ian is just like all pumped up. He's on fire tonight.
Yeah. Oh, love these boys.
So next up is going to be Jesse Lebrecq versus Jerry D'Aurelio. And Jesse still hasn't lost. And Matt is going to tell us before this run, no woman has completed the extended course. And I was like, oh, I think we're going to see Jesse complete the extended course.
And he was like, Akbar, do you think we'll see a finish? And Akbar is like, deaf. Like, yes. Also, I was mad. Like, obviously, you're spoiled on it anyway because of them saying this. But I was spoiled because I saw, like, a tweet from American Enjoyer being like, congrats, Jesse Lebrecq, on being the first woman to finish the extended course.
They are so spoilery on that Twitter account.
I know.
I have to actively avoid, like, I'm often podcasting while the episode is airing, and I usually have Twitter up as I'm podcasting. I have to not have it up because I get spoiled on Ninja Warrior through the Ninja Warrior account.
No, you gotta mute them.
Yeah, I guess so. Akbar is gonna tell them, you need to pace yourself.
Yeah, that sounds like it should have a follow-up, like, check yourself before you wreck yourself, but it's like pace yourself before you knee brace yourself.
I guess so.
An injury.
Jesse gets through the pipes first, and Jerry's going to have some problems with it. She ends up hitting the water. And at this point, I'm just hoping that she doesn't fail here because I want to see Jesse complete the course.
Exactly.
Just like stick in there, Jerry. You can hang in there until Jesse completes it.
But really all the credit to Jerry too, because she did go way further than most of the women that we've, probably all of the women that we've seen.
This really was a team effort. Like part of the reason why we haven't seen a woman complete the extended course is because you kind of need both women to be able to get to the end.
Yeah.
So Jerry manages to get all the way to the rumbling dice as Jesse takes on the zigzag, and she does it. She completes the course. Jerry finally gives in at the rumbling dice after Jesse makes it in, but you can tell how happy she is just to see Jesse up there. Very exciting for Jesse.
I get so emotional with stuff like this, especially if they cut to Barclay and like she looks like she's crying and Jesse's so happy and Jerry's so happy, and women are great.
And this wasn't even the best moment of the episode.
I know. Jesse's the best.
So next up, we got Chris versus Dan. They are side by side for a while. Dan Yeager just flies through that staircase. He is so good at it. Ultimately going to be the downfall of the wolf pack, him on the staircase. But he is very, very good. They are neck and neck all the way through the rumbling dice. They're just going back and forth. Chris ends up dismounting from the rumbling dice first, and Dan is going to go for an early dismount, which ends up getting his shoe just a little bit wet, and he's not going to be able to get any traction on the zigzag because of that, which allows Chris to take the win here, and the Le Breakfast Club is going to be up 2-1.
Yes, and I have so many capital letters in this relay, in my relay notes. I'm so pumped up during this whole thing.
My only capital letters were Dan flies through the staircase.
Well, just like they switch up the order. That's so exciting.
And you meant the next one.
Oh, yeah, yes, for the upcoming relay.
We still got a relay. That's the second relay.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I kind of skipped through notes for the first relay. So ready for the next one.
Well, so the first relay comes, and it's the women first. Then it's Chris versus Dan, John versus Ian at the end. Jesse is going to end up giving them a big lead at the pipes, and this is going to come into play on the next one as well, where it's Jesse versus Jerry, and Jesse gets a big lead on Jerry, and Jesse hits the pipes in just the right way, where Jerry is only a little bit behind her, but because she falls into that dead zone where Jesse has already swung over to the other pipe, Jerry misses the first pipe on the parallel pipes. And so Jesse ends up giving them a huge lead heading into the next round. That will be important to note for the next matchup when they change up the order. Dan, just being a monster at that staircase, really makes up some ground for Wolfpack. However, John still has a big lead on the back half. But again, Ian, just, he is on fire. He is catching up on the rumbling dice. And John manages to dismount first, then Ian right after him. It's down to the zigzag climb. Ian manages to catch John at the zigzag climb, manages to pull ahead, and Ian finishes. John goes down, and Ian is high. He is a good old soda pop right now. He is just bursting.
A good old soda pop.
Yeah.
Which is,
I don't think I've ever seen Ian this excitable.
Yeah. Well, this is insane that he comes back and gets the point for this. Like, I don't understand. Because especially like on the zigzag climb, like I think you'll get occasionally people who are just like particularly good at it, like Ian, who can pass each other. But normally you're seeing people like struggling just to not fall, let alone like leapfrogging other people.
Yeah. So now it's going to come down to the final relay. And this is when I do have some capital letters. They finally flipped it.
Yes. Yes. Thank God.
They finally flipped the order. I finally don't have to write women first.
Yes.
The Breakfast Club has changed their order. It's going to be John versus Jerry, then Chris versus Dan, and then Jesse LeBrec is going to close it out on the back half of the course against Ian Dory. Wow, what a matchup is what I wrote.
Yes, this is so exciting, and it makes sense. Like, they're not just doing it to be like, we just want to like put our woman last or whatever. Like Chris accurately assesses that in the interview later with Alex, that Jesse was the fastest up that zigzag climb. And because it's come to that so many times, like obviously it makes sense to put her there.
Yes. It's going to be a close one. They really liked to showcase, John versus Jerry, yeah. Who is like, what, 18 inches taller or something like that?
Probably.
And so the interesting thing to point out here is that Jesse actually gave a bigger lead for the Le Breakfast Club on that first leg, not because John was slower than her, but in fact because John was a little faster than her. It allowed Jerry to not hit that dead zone,
yeah,
and miss the pipe, and so Jerry actually managed to get off of those parallel pipes quicker, which was actually, you know, you'd think like, okay, well, we got John who's like super fast, like that can, you know, make some time up hopefully, but it actually ends up backfiring a little bit. But they do manage to have a lead, with Chris against Dan. But Dan really starts to make up some time, and he is less behind than he was last time, which is kind of like scary. Like, they managed to win last time. Like, how is this going to turn out? Then Dan makes a crucial mistake. He's flying through that staircase and he falls into the water, giving, the Le Breakfast Club a 5-second lead, which is all Jesse will need. Jesse keeping the lead up. Ian is going to start to catch up, but there's too much pressure on him. Jesse goes straight into the zigzag, and as Ian is trying to catch up to her on the zigzag, he falls in, and Jesse is going to take the win. And great moment.
And she's crying so much that she can't even talk. Ugh, I love her. Women are great.
Yes, I wrote, Jesse is so happy. I was so happy. This is a great, great, great finish to the episode.
Everyone is so happy. Truly. even Ian Dory should be happy. They don't talk to him, but he should be. So it's great for the sport.
Yes. Just the fact that that Jesse not only closed out the relay, which obviously they hadn't done before, I don't think ever on Team Ninja, but she also managed to do it not just against anyone, but against Ian Dory, who was at the top of his game this episode. So just fantastic by Jesse.
I just really need the next two episodes for the producers to be cool about seeding so that we don't get like Barclay's team versus Megan's team or something at the beginning. Cause I want more iconic women on the back half of the course matchups.
Yes. Great finish to the episode, even though, still not super happy about these obstacles, at the qualifying portion of the episode. Hopefully they're going to do a 2-2 thing where we've got some new obstacles for the next one, because I really just feel like these obstacles don't work. But, luckily with the full course, we got the full effect of the greatness of Ninja versus Ninja.
Absolutely. Oh, so much joy.
All right. Well, there it is for you. A longer podcast than like any of the prior three, I think. That's how we've managed to do it here.
We felt much less pressure to stay on track. Because we always feel so pressured to be really focused.
At this point, it's basically just, the American Ninja Warrior podcast about Taryn and Lita, just like it's the American Ninja Warrior podcast about Matt and Akbar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they really probably stole all of their concepts from this exact podcast and not from the Taryn show.
Obviously.
We're trying to get it all out of our system because the real season starts tomorrow and we have to put on our serious faces. We have to put on our suits.
Yes, that's true. We are all,
that's a much more formal podcast.
All business when it comes to American Ninja Warrior proper.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I definitely intentionally scheduled a trip during the premiere tomorrow, but we will figure it out.
We will.
All podcasts from Nashville.
Make sure you follow this podcast, or subscribe to it. Subscribe, not
feel
follow.
Like Natalie Duran. We have so many followers on iTunes.
You can do it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you can leave reviews.
Find in my DMs.
Google reviews. That's probably a thing, right?
I have written one Google review ever, and now it doesn't, like, leave me alone. Now every time I go to a place, Google gives me a push notification. It's like, leave a Google review for this place.
No,
I'm a prolific Yelper. I'm a Yelp person. I'm loyal to Yelp.
And it bugs me because Google reviews are always so different than Yelp reviews, like star rating. I mean, like, Google reviews are always much higher. It's like everyone loves everywhere they go to with Google.
Maybe that's because Google has the push notifications that's like rate us, and people are just like, oh, 5 stars. I'll just like get this out of my face.
You don't have to write anything, I don't think.
Yelp.
I think maybe you do have to write something, but you can write just like a couple words. Like it doesn't, like Yelp is very particular about how much you write.
I mean, I think you can do that on Yelp. It's just like, who's going to go into Yelp and like specifically seek out something to review and then only write like it was good?
Well, the reason I don't use Yelp is because they won't let me just rate things without reviewing them.
Oh, right. Well, I like it because I am a master of language and feel like I need to express myself fully in like enormous paragraphs, and Yelp rewards me for that. And they like that I never stop talking.
Congrats.
Thank you. It's just, it's a great platform for me to express myself, except I normally only give 5 stars, and I don't want the restaurants to think that that undervalues them, because all of my 5 stars is because I'm like, that's great, I need to go write a Yelp review about that. Whereas any 3-star experience I have, I'm like, I don't need to talk about this.
You are not providing value to people.
Yes, I am.
You need a range of scores, or they have no way of telling what's actually good.
But I don't use it as much to guide Yelp users. I use it to let the restaurant or the business know that I had a great time and like shout out people by name, because I know that it makes their day. Because the one time that I was shouted out by a name in a Yelp review, it really made my whole day. Taryn is yawning right now. But when I was shouted out by name at my place of business in a Yelp review, it really made it all worth it for me.
If anyone else was yawning at the same time, we're in sync.
Rude. I'm just saying, like, if you catch your server's name at a restaurant and you had a great time, be like, our server blah 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 was great, because that really makes their day, because the restaurant will see it and the managers will like usually shout them out.
What do you like more, a higher tip or shouting out on Yelp?
I mean, I think that depends, like, how much higher. Like a shout out on Yelp is totally worth like $1, but how much are we talking?
You're usually paying a little more than $1 if it's a higher tip than usual.
Yeah, well, it depends. Not if you only ordered one drink.
Well, I don't order drinks.
Okay, well, I'm not talking, you didn't say you. Oh, you saying, like, if you came to my restaurant, would I rather you shout me out in a Yelp review or leave a higher tip?
Is that would you rather asking? I give you money or shill you to your employers?
Again, it depends on how much money.
All right. Well, make sure you follow us on Twitter. I'm at Armstrong Taryn. Lita is at Lita Tweeted. You can also follow Lita on Instagram at Lita Grammed. Lita, have you been made aware of the new situation here?
What?
Matt figured it out during the Jackbox stream. He was given a notification on Instagram that I made an Instagram account.
Is it because of me?
It's mostly because too many people won't let me DM them through Twitter.
I was not made aware. He got like a push notification?
Yeah, which
like
creeped me out, because I didn't link it to anything. I literally just, like, I was looking into, like, just making an account, and, like, all of the different variations of my name were taken. So I was like, I might as well just make one, even if I'm not going to use it, just so I don't miss out on even more of my name iterations.
Taryn _Armstrong. Why didn't you just use Armstrong Taryn?
Armstrong Taryn was taken. That's what I'm saying.
Why I've been telling you for years to get an Instagram, but then also, so that, like, you could,
like, all of those names were taken. Taryn Armstrong, Armstrong Taryn. And yet nobody ever got a notification about those people. But I make Taryn _Armstrong, and Matt's getting notifications about it. I have like 30 followers right now or something like that. And like, I don't know how they found me.
You have exactly 30 followers. Wow. I think you already care about your iconic Instagram presence.
I think I must have gotten more. I think I was at 28.
You guys should go follow Taron. He has so many posts. They're all selfies. He's thirst trapping. It's honestly embarrassing.
I just like, I'm creeped out because I literally just uploaded a profile picture. And through the profile picture, they must have linked that to my Twitter profile picture, even though it's a different name.
I mean, it has to, your Instagram has to be linked to like an email.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I signed up through my email.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's the same email that you've used to sign up for either Facebook or Twitter or something else that Matt follows you on, so that it knows that it's actually you. So that's how he got that notification. I am now offended that I didn't get that notification, because to me, that says that the algorithm of the internet thinks that you and Matt are better friends than me and you. Yeah, which is not true. Or maybe it is. I don't know. But well, it's rude.
Oh, see, I just got another. They sent me way too many notifications.
Yeah, because I just followed you.
Yeah.
You got a push notification. You can turn those off.
I looked into it.
Decided it wasn't worth it.
There were way too many options for notifications. It's like, do you want to be notified when somebody looks at one of your friend's posts? And like, that's how deep it got. I was just like, what are you...
Okay, well, Taron doesn't follow me on Instagram, so you should not follow him. You should follow me because I actually post, and it's great content and you're missing out.
Well, there you go.
It's mostly photos of myself. You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if I want to use it to message people, I need to have some content on there, but I still don't know what I would put there, so...
Oh, wow. Now I can tag you in any photo that I have posted of you on Instagram. Oh, and
I did turn that off.
You can't be tagged?
I can't. No, I just turned off automatically adding anything that was tagged to my thing.
Oh, is that a thing that can happen?
Yes.
No, I just meant I would tag you so then people who are like creeping through my Instagram and seeing old pictures can be like, who's that guy? Now they can follow you.
There you go.
Can promo you.
You know, maybe I can like do like videos on Instagram. That's a thing, right?
Yeah. And you can do Instagram live,
right?
Which I did
Rob at the airport once.
Yeah. And I feel like it's lower stakes than like a lot of the other live stuff, 'cause it just goes away as soon as it's over. You can keep it on your story if you want to, but you don't have to, otherwise it just ends.
There you go. All right, so it finally happens.
Instagram.
Yep. Just to let everyone know, I'm sorry, but the platform's going to die pretty soon now. That's usually what happens with me and social media platforms.
Is that what happens? What did you do that to? What other platforms MySpace? Have you done that to? You killed MySpace?
I did, yeah.
Wow, I never had a MySpace.
There you go.
I think that MySpace is microgenerational, where like, because you're 3 years older than me, like I think by the time it got to my age, it was just barely gone.
Probably.
And now I know it's your fault.
And I feel like as soon as I got on Twitter, people were like, oh, Twitter's going downhill. But maybe people just always say that.
No, Twitter's never going to die. Twitter is better than Instagram.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this podcast. Like I said, we will be back. We'll talk about the celebrity edition and the all-star edition at some point. Maybe we'll tack it on to a regular recap or something. Who knows?
Yeah, whatever. Oh, you can also find my writing at myentertainmentworld.ca. I've been trying to promote that more. I've been writing recaps of RuPaul's Drag Race and also Survivor, but that season is over. So check those out.
There you go. And as I've mentioned, you can find me on Twitch, Taron Armstrong. You can watch us play social strategy games or trivia-like games like the Jackbox thing. Hoping to do more of that stuff in the future. Those are Sunday nights. We do social strategy Sundays. So if you want to check those out, you can do so on Twitch. And I've also been playing some video games. I'm playing a robot game where I'm playing as androids, and we're going to survive.
Oh, how on brand for you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. We will see you next time.